Sonia, I'm an alcoholic. Hey guys, welcome to the Valley Group speaker meeting. Welcome to the newcomers. We're sure you're going to hear a message tonight that's going to resonate with you. Tonight we have a real treat. We have Kat B. from Fresno, and her sobriety date is April 10th, 2013. She said that her home group is North Park Fellowship. So I got to sit down. Well, I talked to her over the phone. We don't do the other meetings anymore, but I was able to talk to her for a bit and asked her some, just kind of got to know her, and I asked her what her secret to sobriety is, and she said, taking suggestions and step 11. I asked her what her higher power looks like and what that feels like. I'm always curious to see what people consider to be their higher power, and she said a safe place to be whoever and whatever she needs to be at any given moment, and for her that feels like safety and calmness. I asked her to describe emotional sobriety and what it means to her, and she said she described an incident where she narrowly avoided suicide at 5.5 years sober. And she was not emotionally prepared for that. And then I asked her, advice for the newcomer. And she said, I really like this. Be quiet because you carry the disease, not the solution. So, yeah, that's pretty smart. I like it. So I'm going to go ahead and hand it on over to our speaker for the evening, Kat B. from Fresno.
Hi, my name's Kat. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm already crying. Anna's laughing because she knows that that is not something that was normal for me. Yes, Buzz is here as well. He joins regularly. Sonia said, my sobriety date is 4/10/13. First of all, thank you to the Valley Group. I appreciate you guys putting this on, and I know that it takes a lot of work, and it takes effort and willingness, and like they say, that willingness is the key. Thank you so much, and thank you guys for taking an hour out of your night to hear my experience. My experience with sobriety has been tenuous at best. I am a real alcoholic, and I really was offended when people said that at the beginning, because I really thought everything was about me, and I continue to have that painfully, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, and sometimes not painfully, removed from me by God. And that thing that I'm talking about is selfishness and self-centeredness. It's innate for me. It's what I feel comfortable in, and it's what I fostered for years and years. So not only is it ingrained deeply, I believe, in my genetics as an alcoholic and having it be a familial disease, but also I put my energy into finding ways to be selfish for years and years. And so you are what you put your energy into. Sonia said, I spent a lot of time. I've been in this program now since I was 17 and I'm 33. So you can do the math. A long time. And I've been sober for 7 years. And today the difference is that I stay close to the book. So tonight, as we go through this, I wrote down the different pages that everything is on that I want to talk about. And I wanted to start first with the newcomers. On page 45, it says, we had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously, period. That's exactly what this book is about. Its main objective is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. That means we have written a book which we believe to be as spiritual as well as moral. We're going to talk about God. So I'm going to talk about God tonight. I'm going to talk about God a lot because it's really, when it comes down to it, and it's so fundamentally apparent in this time of COVID, is that that's all we really have. The stability that we felt in being able to go buy toilet paper or to run to the bank or, you know, any of those other things that I, for one, have taken for granted, you know, how quickly they can be taken away from us and how superficial then they are. And so for me, the only real thing that I have is my relationship with God. And that's, I mean, that's it. I have money is numbers in a system somewhere. Freedom is clearly subjective to what's going on around us. Relationships are not concrete. So I talk a lot about God. And then secondarily, on page 315, this is one of my favorite lines in the entire book. At the bottom of page 315, it says, "This program is for people who want it, not for people who need it." And there is no greater truth for me. It's at the end of the last paragraph on page 315, if you're looking at your book. There is no greater truth for me because I have never stopped for a day in the last 7 years wanting this. That's one of the only things that has been consistent for me, because I really enjoy like building my life up and then sabotaging it and blaming other people. So God and wanting this program are the two things that have remained consistent for me. And I cry because it's such a miracle that I'm even alive today. I shouldn't be. And I'm so grateful for this program, and specifically for what it's given me, for what it's given me back. So just to start out, those two things, page 45 and page 315, if you're a newcomer, I got told the same thing. I came from a very old school of sobriety. I got told to, hopefully no one's children can hear this, but I got told to sit down and shut the fuck up because I carried the disease. I did not carry the cure. And I didn't know what I was talking about. And please don't come in here and spread your disease. You're here to listen. And that's what I got told. And that's what I tell, you know, my girls. I'm like, you are not well. Also, part of my story is pretty cautionary. I will say that. I did not do as instructed for the first almost 6 years. And I paid for it. And I'm paying for it now. And the only thing that I did right, though, was continuing to want this program and showing up to sit in the seat that I earned. That's it. And I'm still here and not dead. So briefly, what it was like, I had my first drink at my best friend. My mom's on here, so she's going to learn things. I had my first drink when I was 16 at my best friend's birthday party. We went to her older sister's house and our friend's older sister's house, and she bought us a bottle of gin. We had gin and juice, orange juice. And that was also the first night that I drank and drove. And the only way that I can express the feeling of what it was like to drink for the first time was I felt like I was living life, and Anna knows this analogy. I felt like I was living life at a violin. I was a violin. I was here, and I was living, and the sound was screeching, and it was dragging across the strings. And then as soon as I got that drink in me, I felt like a cello. And I was just calm, and everything made sense. I didn't have to worry about controlling my environment. I didn't have to fear what was going on around me, and I didn't have to, I didn't feel anxious. For the first time since I started memories, I didn't feel anxious. I had felt that way since I was about 5 years old. 5 to 8, the memories are pretty fuzzy. I experienced some sexual trauma that I didn't remember until I was almost 30. And so I didn't know why. I didn't know why I felt this way, but I always felt that way. And so what I did in response to that was controlling everything that I could possibly get my hands on. I mean, I was an obsessive child, in my opinion. I wrote my schedule down for the day starting in junior high, things like that. So I had my first drink when I was 16. It was November, so I was 16 and 2 months. Well, when I was 17 and 7 months, I was in rehab. So things really didn't last that long. I was in a juvenile rehab called The Camp in Santa Cruz. And it is so funny because on page 39, it says, we will be absolutely unable to stop on the drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. So I went to rehab and I was like, I am being punished. I'm a victim. It never occurred to me until I was 27, 26, 27, this time around getting sober, that perhaps I was being given an opportunity. Perhaps I was being taught something by God at a young age where I could spare myself the next 10-year break I took in between meetings. So I did that, and then I did the deal with, I went to AA, but I, like it talks about in the book, I think it's on page 64, I was living that double life. AAs are very much the actor. And so I was going to meetings, my mom and I would even go to a Tuesday night meeting together, like, but then anytime I had any sort of freedom, like, I was still drinking. I did not get sober that first time at all. And when it came time for me to be out on my own, I can't even tell you, I did every classic thing. I've been to jail, albeit the time there wasn't long. I have peed my pants. I have woken up places that I didn't know how I got there. I pulled geographics. I moved to New York City. I moved to Arizona. I moved from Arizona to Fresno. I did everything that the book says to. I took a trip. I didn't take a trip. I drank beer. I drank, you know, anything. Somehow I managed to get myself to Fresno. I'll spare you the drunkalog because it's probably just pretty similar. But once I got into Fresno, that's when I started to hit my bottom. I decided that I was going to, I knew what I was doing the whole time. I was living life in a AA hell. Every time I would do something fucked up to somebody, I would think to myself, God damn it, they're going to be on my fifth step. Or on my fourth step, like, fuck, I'm going to have to apologize to them in my ninth. I knew that I'd get back. I just didn't know when or how bad it was going to be. But I was like, whatever, I'm going to ride it out rodeo style. Like, Uncle Jim, oh, there you go, you're on mute now. But yeah, I was just going to ride it out rodeo style, and see when I fell off. So, you know, all throughout that drinking, I was listening to a speaker tape by Sister B before this, and she's hilarious, and she's much more seasoned of a speaker than I am, but she said something that really made sense to me. She goes, I tried to control my drinking, and to continue to enjoy it. And I had never considered it that way because I stopped enjoying my drinking after rehab. So when I was 17, after that, I did not drink with pleasure one more time, ever. There was zero pleasure I got from it because I knew exactly who I was and I knew exactly what I was doing and I knew exactly what it did to my family and how this was going to end. I knew the ending to this story. But I still tried to find pleasure in it. I would make it look good and I would make it look sound pretty in my head. And I would drink beer in the shower before I went anywhere because I wanted to make sure that I felt that cello feeling as often as humanly possible. And I could relate to what Sister B was saying too, because she mentioned that it was something that was delicate, right? I was not willing to be living under a bridge drinking out of a paper bag. I was going to do this in a way that suited me. I was never going to lose a job. I was always going to look good doing it. I was going to make sure that I positioned everybody else to ensure that I had the maximum authority over my drinking. So I could not look bad. And if I did look bad, you were cut off. That's it. Yes, it was my fault, but I would just immediately cut that off because that was my defense mechanism so that I could keep very closely to me this thing that was drinking. And I know this is AA, but I will be very clear that Bill talks about it in the story, in the big book. He talks about when it really hit the skids for him was when he started mixing the medicine that the doctor gave him and the alcohol. That is exactly what happened to me. Bill came into the picture, and it was off the rails there. My husband is actually on this call, and you know, he suffered the most out of that. And that's something that I will have to make living amends to him for the rest of my life. And I am eternally apologetic for all people that I affected, but he was gravely affected, you know. But the great joy that I get today is the restoration of relationships that we are promised in this book. And it's a fucking miracle that this man even talks to me anymore. Like, a miracle. So moving back to when it got really bad, the pills started, and that's when I started misremembering life. I mean, there are years there that are just a complete haze. So if we fast forward to 2012, my best friend died in a car accident, and that was the only excuse I needed to say, go fuck yourself, God. You're not real. Because I was raised in a Christian household, and I used the excuse that, well, she wasn't a Christian, and so my grandmother said that she's going to go to hell. Well, then I can't believe in a God like that, and I lost my relationship, that last thread that I had with God, and it was on from there. For a straight year, I was completely hopeless. I got married in that year. I graduated from college in that year. It should have been the best year of my life. Like, I'm 26 years old. I obtained a college degree. I married this wonderful man. Like, we are doing life. But instead, what that year was like was my bottom. It was less than a year later, it was going to jail. It was, you know, everybody finding out about all my dirty things, the years and years that I had spent so much time protecting these secrets and gone. Everybody knew everything. And that was a really, really scary thing for me. But you know what? For the newcomers, let me just tell you that it was okay. And there are people that still love me, and they know everything. They know all the things, all the dirty, yucky things, because I truly believe that we are each worthy of being loved, no matter what. So I hit my bottom. I used all the excuses I could find, and in February of 2013, I was having a glass of wine, and I went to the bathroom, and the bartender had pulled my glass of wine. I was fucking pissed because I don't sip. I gulp. I just had to pee. You didn't have to take my glass of wine away. And again, it's one of those things, like when I was in rehab the first time, God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. I didn't see it that way, though, for a very long time. I got in my car, and I was like, fuck this place. I'm going to go find somewhere else. Well, as I'm leaving, right, I get pulled over. I blow a .084. Never in my life have I blown first thing in the morning. That's not the way that it is. No, I was probably at a baseline in the .09 at all times for my 20s. And I just so happened to only have one glass of wine that night. And lo and behold, I get pulled over. They take me in, and I am sitting in jail, and I have this experience with this woman. She's spindly and, you know, in her probably late 50s, early 60s. She might have been younger. Long story short, she gives me the lowdown of how to be in the drunk tank for the night. She's like, oh, put the toilet paper down so your butt doesn't get cold on the concrete, then do this. This is what's going to happen. And I saw myself in the future, and I was like, holy shit, this is going to be me. That still didn't stop my drinking. My husband had to come pick me up. We shared a car, and I had the car impounded. So he came and got me, brought me home, and I didn't quit until April. My nose got broken. I got in a fight in San Francisco. I once again came to out of a blackout in handcuffs, and again, my husband had to come get me. that car ride home was probably one of the worst car rides of my life. I was sick and I didn't know what to do other than walk my ass into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. So the next day, it was a Friday night, I went to the Village Group, the 8 p.m. meeting. And let me just tell you, for all of you that don't know, that's just an hour and a half long. I had no idea. That for my first meeting, I thought I was going to die. I was like, what the fuck is happening? Why is this so long? Like 7:55 rolled around and or 8:55. And I was like, all right, hell yeah, I'm out of here. And then they just kept going. And I was like, this is some sort of sick hell. This is bullshit. But I stayed and, I have stayed since. Now, I detoxed for off of those other substances for 8 weeks. I threw up every day. I sweated through my sheets. I was a miserable asshole to be around. But I didn't have the luxury of going to rehab. I had to stick it out. I only got one chance to do that, and that was it. And I didn't have that time out this time. So, you know, what I found in this program was that it's all outlined in this book. On page 59 are the steps. And step one was that we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable, which I just ran down for you. My marriage was on the brink of destruction, and I came into AA because there is nothing more in this world that I wanted than to save my relationship with him. That's what I wanted. I wanted to fix that. I was not interested in anything else. And then when they said, you know, step two, which was came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, I said, fuck that guy. God is not on my side. He has never been on my side. I don't want anything to do with that guy. Why is this even being brought up? But on page 62, it says, we must or it kills us. And it's talking about that selfishness. And my selfish and self-centeredness what always manifests in self-righteous indignation or arrogance. That's my go-to. I default to that defense of I'm right. And that's here, too. I had made up this algorithm in my mind. If people who are not Christian die before they're saved, then they go to hell. And I can't believe in a God like that. It would never even cross my mind that I could like that wasn't the case, or maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, or that I could pick my own higher power. Like that wasn't no. But I said, you know what? I'll come back to this step. We'll just keep going. What's next? Made the decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. I was like, oh, well, that's interesting because I was told that I had to abandon myself to this God. And I was like, no, I don't abandon myself to anything because you know what happened when I was a child when that happened? Yeah, I was abused. So I'm not abandoning myself to anyone, but I will consider doing that. So what's next? This is how I went through the first year of sobriety. I will consider this. Continue with your pitch. I will consider if I want to believe you or not. So when I got to step four, I had already written it out. When I first came back, I knew the action steps. I knew what I had to do. And I was like, okay, I got this. And I, before I even hit 3 months, I had already gone through my fourth step and I was on to step five. So that's where I was. I was on step five, which is on page 74. And it says, pick somebody who will choose the person or persons with whom to take this intimate and confidential step. You know, religious people, no, that's not really for me. We want to do it privately. Okay, so I did it with my first sponsor because that's what they said to do in AA, and I was like, fine, whatever. And so I did this step thoroughly. I wrote it all down, and I was like, boom, here you go. We got through it. And then we got to step six, and that's where I really hit the skids. The first five steps I could conceptualize. I could say, okay, I know that perhaps I'm not buying into this right now. I do believe I have a problem with alcohol. Fuck that shit. I'm done with that. But I don't know about the rest of this. This might be for you guys. And I'm just going to wait and see. So step six rolls around and it says, and we are now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we had admitted are objectionable. Well, my sponsor had told me that I was entitled. And I was like, yeah, well, I can't let go of that because that's just like a family tradition. And she said that I was self-righteous. And I was like, No, I'm right a lot. There's a difference. And she said that I was self-centered. And I was like, yeah, because I'm going to watch out for me because no one else is going to. And that's what life has taught me. When in reality, I'm the oldest of seven. I have a great family, albeit we are like the royal tenenbaums most of the time. They're great. They're always there. My mom will drive her ass from Fresno at like 7 o'clock in the morning to get here by 10 to take care of my kid for 48 hours or 24 hours, and then she'll go back home. Like, what? You have, you know, yeah, bad shit happened to you, but you have a great family. And I had truly believed these things. So from years 2 to year 5, I lived in this purgatory of steps 6 and 7. And so my best solution was I'm going to find people or places or things that will allow me to sort of mimic. I'll just develop mimetic behavior and I'll fake it till I make it and this will all happen. So I started surrounding myself with people like Anna and people who were actually in the book and people who were actually seeking spirituality. And I was like, I'm just going to absorb this through osmosis and it's going to be fine. I don't want to look at these issues. I don't want to deal with this. And then what happened in between those years were a few things. One, I had crippling postpartum. After I had my daughter, when I was 2.5 years sober, I had to beg the doctor not to hospitalize me. I was having auditory hallucinations. Well, lo and behold, just like the first time I went to rehab, I didn't seize that opportunity, right? I could have been sober since I was 17. Granted, I'm grateful for the experience that I do have. However, when life hits, God had given me 2.5 years to get my shit together, and I didn't. And I was emotionally drunk, I guess. I was not emotionally sober when that postpartum hit. Had I been emotionally sober, had I been doing the steps, had I had the tools that this program suggests that we do, I would have been able to address that in a much different way. Because life happens. Crippling postpartum where your hormones freak out, that shit happens. But I was given a literal roadmap that I chose not to take. And so when that big event hit, I allowed it to destroy my life. I used it as an excuse to destroy my life. My relationship with my husband completely degraded to the point that we separated. I blamed everybody else for that issue. But that aside, the main point of that is once again in life, I was given that opportunity to take those steps, and I chose not to. Choice. We have choice in this program. That's the one thing that I've learned above all else is choice. So I spent the next, 3 years really just wallowing in this. You know, I am now looking at divorce and I don't want that for my family and never wanted that. I come from a divorced family and it's complicated to have dads and moms and all that shit. And I'm grateful for my family, but I don't want to do that. I'm exhausted. I did that. I don't want to do that. I don't know how my mom did it. She's a saint. That shit's hard. Co-parenting with all the people. No, I'm not doing it. So what I instead chose to do was live in that safer place, that unhealthy but safer place of selfishness and self-centeredness. Well, let me just tell you what happened again on those 3 years that I spent not doing shit once again in this program. I had the opportunity to reunite with my husband. And during that time, I continued to do work. I continued to be involved. And all throughout that time, I couldn't figure out why I didn't have any sponsees. I was like, this is weird. People just, I'm busy. It's not the right time. God doesn't want this for me right now. No, not the case. It was because no one wanted what I fucking had because I didn't have shit. Because I was morally and emotionally bankrupt and my sobriety was bullshit. All I was doing was staying sober and I was pointing my finger at other people. So I had the opportunity. We got back together and just to tell you the ending really quickly, I fucked it up again. So that's fun. But it was at 5.5 years sober that I was in the shower and I started to have suicidal ideations. Now, prior to this, not but 3 months before that, my sponsor had started to tap me on the forehead. Seven-step prayer. Seven-step prayer. Over and over it kept coming back to this, and I was like, if you say the seventh fucking step prayer again, I am firing you or something worse. I don't know what, but something. And she just kept saying it to me. And so I'm standing in the shower and I'm thinking, I have my marriage back. I have my family. Things are going better. What the fuck is wrong with me? What is going on that I am planning my suicide? And here's the small difference. Now, for those of you who relapse as a part of your story, here is the God, guys, it's a moment. It is a second. It is an atom on the plane of matter in this earth. The difference between drinking and dying and getting close to God and living. And for that split second, you know what I did when I got out of the shower? I dropped to my knees and I prayed that fucking seventh step prayer. That is the only thing that separates me from me and all of my friends who are dead, because I have a lot of them that are dead. That small moment. And so I truly feel that I spent 5.5 years getting sober and listening in meetings for that half a second. Because that half a second was what separated me from life and death. And so, yeah, I feel to a certain extent that I could have done a lot better in those first 5.5 years. But all of that time going to meetings, and I say this because, like, if you're just going to meetings and not doing shit else, like, perhaps it'll be okay. I don't recommend it. It's torture and horrible. But that moment was what saved me, because I had all of that behind me. And it was a turning point for me. You know, the fear that the book talks about on page 67, when I started to face those things, it's like facing your fourth step. I turned and I faced all of the things that I was. I was selfish. I was self-centered. I chose not to be kind and loving to my family, like it says in the book. It says that we are to not seek, you know, self-pity, self-centeredness, but to treat others as if they are sick as well, with kindness and tolerance, and seek God and live in His will. That's our job. That is our fucking job. Like, we're all home for COVID right now. Like, your job is to do that. That's what this book says. Do your job. That's it. That's all you got to do. And for me, that's when things changed. My grandfather was passing away, and him and I had a very complicated relationship. And I found myself at his bedside in February of 2019. And I went on a run the next day, and I had my first spiritual experience. Now, it says that, what? Paper towels are on the counter if you spilled. It's okay. She spilled sparkling water on my bed, so that's fun. Anyway, it's okay. It's okay. I'm going to do this, and you go do that, and it'll be okay. It's just sparkling water. I really hope it's not a lot. Anyway, so I went to this mountain, and guys, if someone had been telling me the story, I would have been like, I err on the side of cynicism naturally. I'm like, yeah, fuck you, this is bullshit. But if it hadn't happened to me, I would not believe this. Up until now, I hadn't had a spiritual awakening. I thought I was like, oh, it's just the educational variety, it's going to be fine. And I was on that mountain that day, and you guys, I was running uphill, which sucks, and I started making sounds that I can't even explain. I was heaving, I threw up, I peed my pants, I was praying to God, and I was just asking, like, please take this from me, please take this from me, please take this from me. I had been brought all the way back down to the point where some people find themselves when they first get sober. I found myself there at 5.5 years because I was unwilling to take suggestion, because I thought I knew what was better, because I was going to take care of Kat. And it wasn't until that moment that I truly found the inspiration in a spiritual experience. And it had to be slapped over the head, hit me in the face kind of spiritual experience, because I was not going to fuck with any other kind of spiritual experience, because God was finally like, okay, I guess I'm going to have to really bitch slap you with this one. And he did. And I won't say that I things changed immediately for me. but I became willing for the first time. And you know what? I got into these steps. And you know what I found is that there's a common thread through all these steps, and it's seeking God. In step two, it says that God is our defense against that first drink. We have a defense against that first drink, and it's there. Step three says we have to abandon ourselves to God. Step four says resentment is the number one offender on page 64, and the only person that can remove that resentment from us is God. We ask him in, we release it in five, telling another human being out loud, because confession is a part of every major religion. It's cleansing to say things out loud. And then we move into step six and seven. And on page 76 is step six and seven. And we said the prayer that it says there, I'm willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character, every single one, paying your taxes, lying to other people, speeding, right? Like, these are things that we do because we think we own the road. I'm going to speak for myself, although I know some of my fellows feel this way too. But like, you are on my road. I'm going to fucking speed because I have a place to go. So don't tell me I can't. For me, that's a character defect. That is self-righteousness and entitlement. Like, you're not entitled to that road. What are you talking about? And it says, grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding, not Kat's bidding, your bidding. And that moves us directly into steps eight and nine. Now, this blew me away, guys. Did you know that step eight and nine in the big book go from page 77 all the way to page 84? The other steps are all crammed in between, like, I don't know, like a 20 pages. And then there is a devotion to these specific steps in this book that is very long. And it occurred to me suddenly, that's because this program is not about us. It's about us getting well and then not being assholes to other people. So this whole section is about other people. We have to go be this and apologize to other people and then not do it again. And then the book says the way that we don't do it again is through step 10, 11, 12. Interestingly, too, something I never realized until I got sober this time, actually after 5.5 years, was on page 84. Guys, I didn't realize this, and maybe some of you old timers know this. The promises that we read, the promises come directly after step 9 in the big book. It says the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. And then it goes, if we are painstaking about this phase, the phase that it's referring to is this phase, 8 and 9, making amends to other people, right? I thought we read the promises and it was like painstaking about this phase and it's some like thing that goes on forever. And no, baby, not right now. And so I didn't realize until later that those promises are when we do things for other people. And that's where Kat comes into being selfish and self-centered. And steps 10, 11, and 12 are where we live after that, right? And a beautiful thing about that is that on page 102, there's a whole chapter about working with others. Again, a chapter devoted to other people. It goes through 1 through 7 pretty quickly, and then there is 10 pages about how to apologize, and then an entire chapter about how to carry this on to other people. You know, and it says, follow the dictates of a higher power and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances, no matter what. And so I chose to step into that light of the spirit and to, and this actually only happened recently where I had this like paradigm shift. And you know what happened when I had that paradigm shift? I was offered yet another opportunity to make things right with my husband after another separation, after I fucked things up again. I was given that opportunity again. And you know what it takes? It takes me asking other people how they are. It takes me getting up in the morning at 5:45 instead of laying in bed and cuddling until 7 o'clock when I really need to be up. I get up and I read my meditation. Sometimes it's just, ugh, it's horrible. But I do it anyway. and I get up and I do those things, and then I start thinking about other people. I text people and I ask them what I can pray for them today. And I write it down and I actually pray it. I pray on my knees. I share with a couple sponsees my experience, strength, and hope every day. I'm a sponsor. I'm not a life coach. You do not want relationship advice from me. Let me just tell you, that's what you don't want. You know, but I can tell you about how to stay sober, because I've been sober for a while and I was in the throes of despair when I didn't take suggestion. As long as we follow the dictates of a higher power, we will presently live in a new and wonderful state. And you know what? That anger and resentment and meanness was lifted from me. I think that's what Christians call like being born again. Like it's gone. Like I have no space for it, and it seems absolutely ridiculous to me. Those resentments have been lifted from me, but it was not until I started taking suggestion. It was not until I started actually doing these things. So I don't think that I'm unique, but I do think that I might have taken a little bit longer than some other people, and I'm happy to admit it and share it and say out loud, you know, in front of a group of people, that at 5.5 years sober, I wanted to kill myself. And you too can have that promise fulfilled if you decide not to take suggestion. Like, that is available for you if you want it, because that's how we live if we don't follow these principles. So those are the things that I've learned. That's the shit I've done, and that's where I'm at now. So thank you guys so much for taking the time to be here tonight. And this meeting isn't possible without all of you, and you just spent an hour listening to me. So you all are just magical unicorns, and I am so in love with this program and grateful for what it's given me, and I will continue to try and live in these principles. So thanks.